This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. The news of a doctor who saved a child whose hand was stuck in an escalator went viral recently. And so today I'm catching up with Dr. Dalvinder Singh, whom we last had on the show in 2010 as a nominee for the AYA Youth Awards, about this particular incident. So it's an updated show in 2016. More importantly, Dr. Dalvinder, who is now with the Sarawak Health Department, shares his views about the state's health challenges, from delivering healthcare to the interiors to dealing with soaring teenage pregnancies. Dr. Dalvinder, welcome back.
Hello, good to be back.
So it's been 6 years since you were last here.
Yes.
And very recently, you were witness to an incident involving a child who had his hand stuck in an escalator. Could you tell us what you saw and how you reacted?
So I was just traveling from Kuching to KL, one of my frequent trips. And as usual, as I come out from the arrivals, I would just dash quickly out to the exit. And so this time around, as I was coming out, I noticed a bit of a commotion towards my right. I gave my first glance, didn't think much about it. But when I walked further, I noticed a father holding his child at the bottom of the escalator. And I was horrified when I saw the boy's hand stuck at the side up to his forearm. In my mind, I thought, how in the world can, you know, a hand fit in such a tiny gap? And later on, I would discover that the child was actually restless and the mother put the child down on the escalator and he squatted down and his little fingers caught through the side and it's got sucked in. So initially, I was a bit out of my element as well because I'm not in the hospital. I didn't have my medical equipment with me. So it seemed like a situation that I thought maybe for the firefighters to do something about. But when I looked around, all I saw were people with their smartphones out and they were taking pictures and videos and the father and the child screaming there without, you know, any assistance. So I thought the least I can do is go and attend to the child and see what we can do. So the first thing I asked the dad was, I introduced myself and I said, how long has the child been there? I was surprised when he said it was 15 minutes. And as I went on to inspect the hand, I noticed it was starting to turn blue. That was when I realized we didn't have much time. And something had to be done quickly. And thank God there were two maintenance workers nearby. And they had steel rods and hammers. I guess they were working on tiles or things like that nearby. And a light bulb just went on and said, this is exactly what's needed to create a bit of space to try to remove the hand. Of course, I tried a few times to negotiate the hand through the small opening, but it was so tightly fixed. So I yelled at them, they came, and yeah, we hammered the metal rod pieces at the side, and just in the nick of time, the hand was removed. So when I held the child's hand, my heart sank, because I saw few tendons torn, bones exposed, profuse bleeding, and I knew I needed to pack the hand quickly. And just at that right time, at the corner of my eye, I saw a nurse holding exactly what I needed. And so I called her, hey, come quickly. And quickly we packed the hand, splinted it, bandaged it. And the child was then whisked off to the clinic where an ambulance rushed the child to a nearby hospital. I had no idea who the child was, his name, where he came from. I just walked out from the airport, but I had so much joy. I got back home, I spoke about the incidents to my family and I slept and I didn't think much about it. I thought it was just one of those, you know, events that happens. And the next day when I woke up, I was surprised to see so many notifications on my Facebook. And I had no idea that that story would then become viral and reach such a big audience. You know, for me, people say, you know, this is a heroic act and things like that. But I just thought that was just the natural thing to do. Because nobody can help everybody, but everybody can help somebody.
One of the things that I always find most striking about doctors and about people who provide this sort of care is there a gap between your training and real life? Because, you know, you might know theoretically what to do. You know, when you said when you saw the boy's hand, you saw tendons, you saw exposed bone, you saw things, you know. A non-medical person would look at that and just go, this looks, you know, like a huge injury. But you can tell me exactly what's going on. So as a doctor who has had enough training to understand something needs to be done, but maybe you don't necessarily see hands caught in elevators every day, what was going through your head, medically speaking, when you were approaching the situation? Were you thinking, okay, what do I need to look out for? You know, who's the patient? What do I ask?
To be really honest, when I saw the child, I was really thinking, what can I do? Because the last thing I want to do is cause more harm.
Yeah.
You know, and this was more of a technical and a life-saving element in which we're not exactly trained in medical school to do, which is, you know, mainly about removing body parts from crushed, you know, machinery and things of that sort. But I guess, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, and you just figure out, you know, something that needs to be done. But I guess you don't panic too much, I would say, because I think after seeing, you know, many patients, even in more dire circumstances, I think that's when your brain starts to work, and the emotional part of things, your emotions are a bit detached, because you know that, look, you got to do something now,
and you have to be detached. Because otherwise you'd not be able to work.
Yeah, you'll be paralyzed. You will feel unable to do anything. Yeah.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Dalvinder Singh, whom you might recently have seen on social media, rescuing a child whose hand had gotten stuck in an escalator. We're talking about that incident. We're also going to be talking about public health challenges in Sarawak. If you've got any questions, if you'd like to speak to Dr. Dalvinder, give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, you said that you have to stay calm, because if not, you'll find yourself paralyzed. And as you say, when you arrived, people were not exactly moving to help. They were documenting the incident. Why do you think why was that happening? Why didn't anybody step forward to assist?
That's a very good question. I think nowadays, even when you notice an accident happening at the side of the road, you would see people slowing down, removing their windows, and you would see their phone out, and they're recording the incident. But very few people actually really stop to help. I guess everybody wants to be to have a part of the action, of the drama, you know. And I guess when they share it, they get lots of likes. And the thing that really puzzles me is how some people, they record the incident and they can put a caption there. Oh, so sad. Will anybody help him? When you are there and you could do something. Maybe you can't, you know, do anything really medical, but you can be there to comfort the child. You can be there to at least give some water to them, create more space for those to come, call, you know, the appropriate agencies. You can be there to do something instead of just crowding the area so that you can get, you know, a piece of the drama in which then you want to share and you get a lot of likes and your video becomes viral.
Do you think that it could have been that people felt underqualified to help because they aren't medical professionals, because they're not maintenance workers, because they're not people who understand, you know, how escalators work?
Yeah, I think for most people, when they look at that situation, they would not know what to do. And but I think that the little that we can do, especially number one, call for help. Number two, we can create more space so that people can come in and come out, those that know what they're doing. And for example, offer help to the family members around, like the mother that was around witnessing the entire thing.
Distressed.
Yes, because how would you feel if it was your family member and people were just recording it? I mean, that's a situation where you felt totally, you know, exposed, you know, and people are just taking pictures of your child and that's not comforting at all.
Was the child very distressed when you arrived?
Yes, of course. He was screaming in agony and his hand was bleeding. And
I would think that would be enough to get people to step forward and help, you know, a child in pain. But it's quite disheartening to think that that's not the case. Would somebody need first aid training to safely help?
In this case, the extent of the injury was not even clear because the hand was deeply embedded at the side. Only once the hands was removed, that's when I realized that, okay, we've got some bleeders to deal with, we've got some broken bones, we have to splint, we've got some tendons exposed, we have to prevent more, you know, infection to set in, keep it clean, things of that sort. I guess the faster aid is given, the better the outcome. And I'm so glad that just a few days ago, I visited the boy in the medical center. And I was so glad. I was so happy to see him recovering well. He had a series of surgeries to repair the tendons, the broken bones, and skin graft to replace the lost skin tissue. But I thank God he is discharged. He's home now. And the doctors say that he should regain use of his hands, and is largely due to the quick interventions that took place that day. So I thank God that it worked out well for the child.
And that you happened to be there at the airport at that exact moment in time.
Yeah, it was just being at the right place at the right time and just being able to do a little for the boy.
What have you done with your newfound notoriety? I mean, it's not every day that a doctor wakes up, as you say, to, you know, Facebook notifications, everybody suddenly knowing who you are and what you do.
Exactly. So I woke up the next couple of days with thousands of friend requests, thousands of messages from total strangers. And I thought to myself, you know, what good can we do out of this situation? Because, I mean, it's a story. It's definitely a story that happened at that time. But then I thought, you know what? It would be fantastic if we can inspire more people to do the same, to help each other. Because like I said just now, nobody can help everybody, but everybody can help somebody. And so just 1 week after the incident, I set up a social enterprise called Help Somebody. And the tagline is, because everybody can help somebody. And Help Somebody is a social enterprise that connects people to make a difference in our community. So with all the attention, we set up a page, www.helpsomebody.com.my. And we want to connect people. And we plan community projects, mobile medical clinics, as well as food aid for families in need. So the idea is, with this platform, people can help somebody and make a difference. And you do not need to be, you know, very rich. You don't have to have all the skills in the world. You know, everybody can just play their part. So this was something very unexpected. I would have never imagined that in 2016, this incident would happen. And just 1 week after that, we would set up this social enterprise called Help Somebody.
And I understand that it's working. Is it fair to say it's working mostly in Sarawak? That's where a lot of the work is focused at the moment?
Yes, I guess because I work in Sarawak. I've been there for 6 years now. And it has opened up my eyes to see some of the challenges that we face in Sarawak State, and how people that come from the interiors, they have a lot of needs. And so the idea is to find the need and meet it, and find the hurt and heal it. And so with Help Somebody, we plan to do just that, find those needs and meet it, and connect Malaysians from all around to come join in together. And that's what the idea is all about.
It's those needs in Sarawak that we'll be addressing in our second half of the show. You're listening today to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin, speaking with Dr. Dalvinder Singh, the man who saved a child whose hand was stuck in an escalator. You might have seen that going viral recently on social media. He's also part of the Sarawak Health Department. And up next, we talk about the public health challenges facing that state. If you've got any questions, if you've got any comments, do give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Dr. Dalvinder Singh. He works at the Sarawak Health Department, and it was on a trip back from Kuching recently that he also saved a child whose hand was stuck in an escalator. We spoke about that incident earlier, but now we're talking about Dr. Dalvinder's work in Sarawak itself, which is kind of going on, has been ongoing since before, but also now through helpsomebody.com.my. Now, could you tell us how long you've been working in Sarawak and your experience of the health system there? Because I think, I would imagine it's quite different from here on the peninsula.
I came to Sarawak in 2010, where I did my housemanship in Sarawak General Hospital. And I thought to myself that since I'm from Kuala Lumpur, as soon as I finished my housemanship, I would return back immediately. But as I began to work among many of the Sarawakians, I discovered there were some of the most hospitable people, very friendly, and I decided to stay on. And so after 2 years in Kuching, I was posted to the district of Lundu, where I was the district health officer overseeing that district for another 2 years. And then later on to Sarawak State Health Department, where I'm assistant director in the family health section of the services, health services.
What are some of the main challenges that you've noticed within Sarawak's healthcare system?
I would say that the biggest challenge that we have is the size, the sheer size of the Sarawak state. I mean, if you look at it, it is almost the size of the whole of the peninsula of Malaysia. But the population is very much scattered. And because of the situation, it's a logistic nightmare sometimes to transport patients, to deliver healthcare, and to reach even to the most interior of the of places. But I'm so glad with all the projects that we are doing and systems in place by the Ministry of Health, we are trying our best to even meet those even at the sheer corners of Sarawak by boat, by air, and even by land. So that's number one. The number two challenge that we have is, of course, in terms of the distribution of healthcare staff. I mean, it's quite common that doctors tend to want to be staying and living and working in the bigger cities. And to get them posted to the interior places is a bit of a challenge. Many don't spend too long of a time. And specialists as well, to work in the district hospitals, that is a challenge as well. So the good news is now there are more doctors coming in. And with that, we have an increase of staff, and we hope that in the next coming years, we are able to meet the needs of patients in a better fashion. Yeah.
Very briefly, before we turn back to the work that you're currently doing, a listener has said, "Doctor, you should ask every member to buy a sticker placed at the back of a car screen for help somebody to increase awareness of the public to do the moral right when the situation arises."
Well,
so, an idea.
That is a very good idea. I think, you know, we will discuss with our team and, you know, come up with a car sticker, you know, or even a T-shirt that just says, hashtag help somebody. And, you know, it's good when good things get viral. You know, instead of just negative ones. So thank you so much for that suggestion. Definitely a great idea. Yeah.
On a rather separate note, Sly said, how come the mother is getting off scot-free? She should be given one stroke of the rotan, poor boy. I don't know if that's fair, but, you know, it does speak, I guess, to how some people feel about the situation. But you mentioned that the mother was very distraught at the time.
Yes. I think it's not fair to put the blame on the mother, because I don't think this is something the mother wanted. No mother would ever want a child to be in a situation like this. And even meeting the mother personally, you know, she was so affected by this whole situation as well. And she was actually holding the child, but the child was so restless that she decided to put the child down and hold his hand. But sometimes children, they're very unpredictable. And he squatted down and his hand, you know, went towards the side. And many people don't know that actually the mother's hand also got stuck at the side, but she was able to pull it out and she was left with a few stitches. So clearly her hand was holding the child's hand and she was actually in very close contact to the child. So I think from this situation, I think as the general public, we can learn that and learn from the situation that we have to be careful with little kids. I think it would be safer if we are holding them, and we do not, by no means, they should be squatting at the escalator. And another important thing to note as well is there is that red stop button at the escalator. And if you notice, anybody's garments, clothes, or footwear gets stuck at the side of the escalator, you can just push that red button and the escalator will halt. And that would, you know, make it easier to recover, you know, the situation, as opposed to it going down and sucking in more of the limb or the garment and things of that sort. Yeah.
If you've got any questions or comments for Dr. Dalvinder, we're talking about the escalator incident, which you might have seen, but we're also talking about Sarawak's health challenges. Give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. Text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, you mentioned earlier how there is a reluctance for doctors accustomed to perhaps easier working environments, to going to work in the interiors, going to work in rural areas. What challenges are specific to doctors practicing who do get sent to those areas and have to serve these populations?
I guess when I was serving in the district, personally, it's a change of lifestyle, because the basic necessities that we are accustomed to is very different in the interiors. Sometimes even electricity, water is something that we take for granted may not be there all the time. And the availability of infrastructure, of businesses around, places that we want to go for leisure, you know, that basic lifestyle that we usually practice is different in the interiors. And especially if you have a family, because your children will have to go to school, your family is not together with you. So these are things that I guess makes it a bit of a challenge. But thankfully, there are many doctors that have actually sacrificed their time, sacrificed even their relationship with their families and things of that sort to actually go out there and serve. And these are the unsung heroes that sometimes we don't know about, but they are there. And they serve even in the interiors of Kapit, Belaga, these places that you can only access by boat, sometimes 4 to 6 hours in the treacherous conditions where with water infested with crocodiles, you know. But they are there and they serve the people and they make a difference in those areas. So, you know, if you're a doctor and you're listening and, you know, you're finding a place that you want to work or you want to post, I just want to say Sarawak is a fantastic place for you to go, and you will be able to learn so much more, see a lot of things that you may not see even big cities.
Is the health department of the state doing anything to attract more doctors?
Yes, in fact, the Ministry of Health, they do have special allowances for doctors to come and serve over there. And for doctors that want to further their studies, in the master's programs, there's some consideration given if you have served in the district. So that are some of the measures taken.
Yeah. And there is we talked earlier about the problem of delivery, with the problem of it of equity, I suppose. But what is the quality of healthcare facilities? You know, it's one thing to say you can't reach everybody, but for the people who do go to, for example, Sarawak GH, would you say the quality of facility is comparable to what you'd get here?
I will say that the doctors that we have and the medical staff that we have at the General Hospital, they are dedicated in their work. They do their best to serve the patients. Many of them even working longer hours than they have to, you know, sacrificing their own time. But of course, the patient loads are high. We have got more patients because they have to come from all around Sarawak to receive sometimes specialized care. And definitely the sheer number would make the waiting time longer. Patients may need to wait, you know, to be seen and for their surgeries, for example. And that could pose a challenge. But of course, they prioritize cases. And the most severe cases will be seen first. So definitely there's a challenge, but they are doing their best considering the situation that they are in Sarawak State.
And is there work being done with indigenous communities?
Oh, yes, of course. There are so many indigenous communities in Sarawak. There is the Ibans, the Bidayos, you have the Orang Ulus, you have the Penans who are nomadic. You have all of these different tribes, and the healthcare system reaches out to them. We have village health teams, mobile health teams that go in there to reach out to them, and even the flying doctor service, in which they fly in to pockets where people are inaccessible by road, for example, once in a month, to see patients, even drop medications that are needed to reach out to these communities. Of course, now with the improving conditions of roads and things of that sort, the Pan-Borneo Highway, we really hope that it would also benefit the healthcare so that we can access those areas even in a better way.
Pivoting quickly now from Sarawak back to the escalator, we have LTY on the line. Good afternoon, LTY.
Yeah, good afternoon, Lynn. And good afternoon, Doctor. Congratulations, all right?
Hello, thank you.
Yeah, yes, congratulations. I have two comments, all right?
Okay.
First thing, is about civic-minded. No? The mindset of people is not so simple. Basing on last many incidents, people are scared to help. Why? Because of legal repercussion or whatever it is, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You see, in China, even when a child is knocked down, nobody going to help because they are scared of legal repercussion. Okay? I think this mindset has to change, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Be a bit brave, okay? My second thing is about the technology of escalator.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, we have heard about many, many cases involving escalator. I don't blame the parent, you know why. Supposing a parent go to a supermarket involving up and down escalator, he might be looking after 4 or 5 children. I never trust children, frankly. I never even trust my grandchildren for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So I think this will open the eyes for the manufacturer. Why it is not foolproof? Still, there's loophole in the functioning of escalator. Thank you. I hope listeners can call in and comment on escalator also. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, LTY.
Thank you.
I think the gentleman made a very good point. Of course, at the back of my mind, I did think about that too, to be really honest.
Like, why is this even happening?
Yes, and also about that point where you could be liable.
Yeah.
Because I know very well that if I went there and I did something wrong, they could very well blame the first person that attended to the child and said, oh, because of your actions, you made it worse. Which is why I was very careful as well. But sometimes things have to be done. You know, you can't just watch and do nothing. It just feels really wrong. You know, and especially if you have a little bit of knowledge as to what to do, it's imperative. I mean, if it was my family, I would want someone to help me too.
Even with that fear, you had to step forward.
Yes, but yeah. I guess at the end of the day, you have to weigh. You have to say, this is the risk. But if you don't do anything, the situation could be worse. And so sometimes we just have to be brave. We have to step out and make a difference.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Davinder Singh, who saved a child whose hand was stuck in an escalator. If you've got any comments or any questions for Dr. Dalvin, give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we were talking about Sarawak, and it has the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the country. What factors contribute to this?
Okay, yes, Sarawak has the highest percentage of teenage pregnancy. In terms of numbers, Sabah is number one and Sarawak is number two. But if we look at it at a bigger picture, we also have to understand that the numbers of abortions around Malaysia is something controversial. And access to, you know, abortions and things of that sort is much easier, I would say, in Peninsular Malaysia, where, you know, there's clinics all around. As opposed to, for example, in Sarawak. And I think it's also the culture where families are more accepting, whereby if they are not in school, especially, or if they're from the interiors, for example, Kapit district is the district with the highest percentage of teenage pregnancy in Sarawak, where close to 20% of every pregnancy is a teenage pregnancy. So It is a cultural dimension to it as well, but that is why we are taking action towards it, because we know the impact and implication on it. And that's why an interagency community we have set up in Sarawak called the One Stop Teenage Pregnancy Committee. And it's made up of the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education, Ministry of Registration, and also the Ministry of Welfare, Women and Family Development under the Minister, YB Dato' Fatimah. So we are working to solve problems by case to case and do prevention activities as well to tell them that, hey, you know what, stay in school. How to avoid yourself from getting into situations that will get you pregnant. You know, how the use of alcohol especially, like tomorrow is Gawai. And, you know, sometimes when we trace back 9 months after that, we would see in the hospital, wow, a lot of cases.
A spike, right.
Yeah, and because I think sometimes alcohol has the influence too. And when they drink and they mingle and sometimes they, you know, not too inhibited as to what they do. So there are measures taken. And we are glad to report that from last year, 2014 to 2015 and this year, we see a decline. We see a decline, about a 15% decline. In cases of teenage pregnancy, and we hope it continues together with this interagency and collaborative actions together.
Pregnancy is one thing. Another important point about Sarawakian health is nutrition. And the State Health Department has established a nutrition program which includes nutrition surveillance, rehabilitation and promotion. What nutrients are usually lacking in the Sarawakian diet?
I guess it depends on the socioeconomic background of the community. If you go to places where they are just farmers, you know, people just working on their crops, and they're unable to afford meat, things of that sort, then you would see protein, I mean, cost more money. As well as, for example, like for us here in bigger cities, milk products, you know, easily available. For them, that could be a challenge. So that is why we have our nutritionists. They go around. And for those that are underweight, diagnosed as underweight, they have malnutrition, food baskets are delivered to them, which includes milk, vitamins, and supplements so that they can gain weight and avoid them from being ill. But I guess as the socioeconomic situation improves, as jobs become, you know, more readily available, we would see an improvement even in this situation. I think if you look even in Peninsular Malaysia 20, 30 years ago, those were similar challenges that were faced in the interiors as well, especially among the Orang Asli communities. So those are the similar challenges that we face you know, in the interiors.
And that's trying to be addressed right now.
That is correct, yes.
Finally, to close off, what are your hopes for the future of healthcare in Sarawak?
I really hope that healthcare could be something that is personalised. Sadly, sometimes when you go to the private centres, because patients just have two choices, either the private or the public centres. And sometimes when you go to the private centres, you would notice that maybe it's all about if you can pay, you get the service. If you can't, you know, you can't get that service. And when you go to the government centre, sometimes people feel it's a bit too crowded, things of that sort. But, you know, it would be fantastic if we can one day achieve a situation where there's very good collaboration between the government and the private sector. And we are working towards that so that Malaysians can get good quality healthcare, accessible. And we would like to see a community that that are healthy, free from disease, and having a good quality of life. I think that is the dream. That is a dream that I have. Sometimes, you know what, people, Malaysia may not need just another hospital. Sometimes maybe Malaysia may need a different type of hospital, a hospital that, you know, caters directly to their needs, a hospital that is very personalised to their care. And instead of we telling the patients what to do, maybe we can hear what the patients actually want and expect from us. Maybe that would, maybe personally, give us a bit more insight as to how we can improve things.
I said earlier, finally, but actually I realized since we have a show of two halves, I should ask you another finally question, which is, what message would you like to also leave with Malaysians if they do see somebody in need of help and they have these things running through their minds, you know, like, I don't know what to do. If I do something, I could be doing the wrong thing. I could get sued. I could be liable. What advice would you offer the next time somebody finds themselves in that situation?
I think regardless any situation that you're in, there's always something that you can do. Even if you don't have the technical knowledge and the skill, sometimes just being there, just to give an encouraging word, just to give a little bit of water, just to tap on the shoulder of the mom and say, don't worry, I'll stand with you. It means a lot. Just standing there, taking a picture or a video, doesn't do any good. But if you can just be there for someone, just taking the effort to want to just help, ask them, what do you need? Maybe you can take care of their bags. Tell them, look, don't worry, I will be with you. That means a lot. I think at the end of the day, we have to understand that nobody can help everybody, but everybody can help somebody. And when we step out to meet a need, you will be surprised the lives that you can change and the difference that you can make just with a simple act of kindness.
I've been speaking today with Dr. Davinder Singh, who works in the Sarawak Health Department and who also was kind of big on Facebook a little while ago, saving a child whose hand got stuck in an escalator. And we've been talking about those two very separate things, united under the theme of, well, you know, you can help. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening today to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.